Khan Show with Anna DeBlasis right here on 720 WGN and this hour on CLTV. Check your local listings.
Did you do your makeup today, bro?
Did not.
No.
Did not. I did the TV show this morning.
Oh, yeah.
Over at the Channel 7, and then I stepped out in the rain, and now I look like a sopping mess of pancake makeup, of face paint.
This weather doesn't do much for the hair.
Exactly.
Or the face.
Our guest, Brett Baer, knows what that's all about. He has that exact problem when he steps out into the rain.
He always looks great.
In Washington, D.C., and that starts dripping off his face. Doesn't that happen all the time? Escape to Washington.
Hello.
Don't mind me. Hitting all the wrong
buttons. We're very excited. We're going to watch.
It's over me. That's a really good thing.
Yeah, just good to have you. All right. Brett, a lot has happened. A lot has happened over the weekend here. It was a long weekend. Now, I find this a little intriguing that Donald Trump, the president-elect, who had been pretty critical of politicians who take vacations and, you know, go golfing and things like that, and that was a regular cry. We didn't hear much from him until he sort of popped up on Saturday, from about Tuesday of last week to Saturday, and then a little bit on Saturday, and started tweeting about this the recount that's going to happen in Wisconsin. Do we know that has he been meeting with people? Has he been working on this? What do we know?
Yeah, he was down in Mar-a-Lago, his home away from home, down in Palm Beach, and he was apparently having some meetings and working on things, but he also, I think, took to the golf course a couple times over the holiday. He has, in full force, been meeting today with a ton of people, including General David Petraeus, who visited him for more than an hour, and we're hearing for the Secretary of State position. He meets tomorrow with Mitt Romney over dinner, we're told. You know, where you want to read that into, who knows? But he clearly got engaged on Twitter over the weekend over this recount possibility.
Yeah.
What do you make of Kellyanne Conway coming out on, was it the Sunday morning shows, and saying that, you know, Romney, you know, has been so critical of Trump, but we're not sure that, you know, he really should be considered, or words to that effect? And some are saying she went rogue now, and others are saying, well, no, she knows something.
Well, I have a hard time believing that she didn't have some leeway there, that they didn't have some kind of, you know, let her do her thing and express her frustration, and perhaps, you know, mirroring or mimicking what she's hearing from the base about people who are upset about what Mitt Romney said and did during the election, Trump supporters, that is.
Mm-hmm.
So I think she probably had some leeway from the big man himself, but that's, you know, just an assumption. I don't think that she would get over her skis that much with what she said without some kind of blessing.
That it appears to me, and this gives me a little bit of pause,
mm-hmm.
that they seem to be floating some things on Twitter and see what the reaction is.
There's a lot of balloons flying.
Yeah, and they seem to be doing it on social media. And there should be a caveat with social media. People who do that are doing it at the risk of a captive audience. So that's the echo chamber issue. If you really want to know how the American people are going to feel, or how that's going to impact you with people who are not necessarily on your team, but maybe swayed over to your team, I think talking to your natives, if you will, doesn't necessarily do that. It's just bad science. But I think it's something that they fall prey to, because I don't think the president-elect really wants to go hire a polling company or do any of those kinds of things, because he likes to feel this stuff in his gut, is my sense. And Twitter and Facebook seem to be a place where he feels like he can gauge sentiment.
Well, I think you're right, and I do think that, you know, the base operates in the confines of Twitter pretty heavily, and if he wants to hear a response, he can go there. I do think they've been putting up a lot of trial balloons, and I think some of these names and some of these meetings are just for show, and that the people actually being considered for these positions are, you know, a select few. That said, you know, this is a guy who knows how to play the media. He knows how to create drama. He knows how to, you know, show, suck up a media cycle and absorb all the oxygen in the room. He's doing that, I think.
Can I refine that observation, though? Because I think it's not that he knows how to, because that's clear he knows how to. And a lot of politicians know how to do that. He chooses to do that.
He enjoys it.
I wonder in terms of, I guess, you know, for us, it's great in the sense that he's always doing something. He always gives us something to, you know, something to chase, like the cat chases the laser light around the living room. That's like us, right?
Thing.
Yeah, that's right. That's the kind of us right now. But I suppose it's entertaining. But is it the kind of, you know, sturdy, steady leadership that should come from the American presidency? Even if you don't love the president, having a president that, you know, on Twitter just remembers the great national holidays and not like, hey, not literally making something up out of whole cloth that he won the popular vote because of voter fraud. I mean, there's no one is saying that except for him.
Right. But on the other side, though, you have.
Maybe Alex Jones.
Right. Yeah. Not even Fox News Channel.
No legitimate, you know, operation or Secretary of State's office is saying that. You know, voter fraud is real, but nowhere near those numbers possible. And that's what makes not only that tweet, but also this recount, I think, you know, you're talking about turning three states, and you're talking about more than, you know, 100,000 votes. Remember, we went to a recount over 531 votes in Florida in 2000.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, and I think that, and Jill Stein doing it, and the Hillary Clinton piece, and you were going to say.
On the other side, you have the White House, the Obama administration, saying there's absolutely no evidence of any kind of hacking or widespread hacking or anything that would impact this election, and yet the Clinton attorney came up and said we're doing everything to make sure that hacking did not take place. The Stein camp is going even farther than that to say we believe there might be some hacking here. What is this, a suspicion? Is there just a political motivation? Is there any evidence that they think they have? What have you heard, Brett?
Well, I listened to Dr. Stein on two interviews today, and you know, she says there was hacking in this election, you know, and the Democrats were hacked, and John Podesta was hacked, and yes, that is true, but you don't have evidence that these voting machines were, right. And I think that it's a bit of a stretch on this this line. $6 million it takes to do these recounts, and she's raised the money. I mean, I think she may have raised more than she did in her campaign for president. But I think it's interesting to watch. One more thing about Trump, and that is, you know, he said what he said on Twitter about the popular vote. It absorbed the media immediately, and everybody went to it. It was the shiny thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What we were not talking about was the New York Times conflict of interest story with his businesses around the world that was actually pretty well reported, and I think potentially is a problem for him in how he answers those questions.
There's a number of conflicts, including domestic conflicts, too. He's got the Dakota Pipeline. He's got an investment, a relatively modest investment compared to the rest of his assets, but an investment in that nonetheless. Investment in companies surrounding that. And that is exactly what the spirit of the request that presidents pull their assets out and put them into a blind trust is all about. Which is, if you have there's real business on the desk that the president would have to sign that would impact their wealth on the other side. And it is quite a moment. And then you do have these international complications, as we're pointing out here, as the New York Times pointed out. There are some real things here. But it's interesting because there are a lot of ways that people get information. I know exactly what you're saying, but those stories still did exist. The people who react minute by minute, as cable news does and talk radio does and all the rest of that, we all jump at that at the moment. But do the consumers do that?
Well, I mean, they listen. You know, it absorbed the Sunday shows. It absorbed, you know, a day of cable news, which perhaps may have focused in on that piece. Eventually, you're going to get to this story, because in the interview that he does with the New York Times, he says, in theory, I can be president of the United States and run my business 100%. Then he says, the president of the United States is allowed to have whatever conflict he wants, he or she wants.
Right.
I don't want to go by that. Well, you know, that's going to be an issue.
Yeah. There'll be a lot of
thought process.
Brett, I think it's a safe bet that there are going to be a lot of things to talk about here over the next couple of weeks, months, and years. Because
I think you're right. I think you're right.
He does enjoy the drama of it. All right. Hey, by the way, Brett Baer, here's a little something you might want to think about. There's a book coming out January 10th.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
This Brett has written, 3 days in January, Dwight Eisenhower's Final Mission. I saw you talk about this. Well, actually, you and I talked about this, but I also saw you. They produced a piece, I think, about this, haven't they already?
We're working on an hour documentary, but I did a little live shot about it because we were talking about the transition now, and that transition also in a very dangerous time. Eisenhower passing on to JFK, and his farewell speech is really what the book is based on. Eisenhower gives his farewell speech January 17th, 3 days before JFK's inaugural. And the message within that farewell speech, which everybody knows is the military-industrial complex speech, is pretty interesting, and the warnings and the thoughts that he reflects on his 8 years in office.
Wow. Mm. Wow. That's
I dug up a lot of stuff over 3 years with a great researcher at the library in Abilene, and for people who thought history started with Kennedy, there's some interesting stuff about Eisenhower.
Well, for sure. And the military-industrial complex, nobody would know better about that than a sitting U.S. general, commander of the Allied forces, essentially, would understand exactly how that worked. And then becoming president and getting lobbied on all the different missions and weapons programs of the 1950s, where the government way overspent versus bang for buck, if you'll pardon that expression. He's a great case study about making sure that we're doing the right thing. And I know that President Trump will be just fine with that. Won't be a
there
problem.
You go. I'm hoping he reads it.
I'm hoping he does too.
Send him a copy.
Send Jared Kushner a copy.
Yeah, that's
3daysinjanuary.com.
You got it. Thank you very much, Brett.
Thanks,
appreciate
Brett.
It.
We'll see you guys.